The Fed's out of options. Rate cuts, money printing, balance sheet reversals. They call it policy, but it's really panic. This is in-game economics, where hope replaces discipline and the illusion of control finally breaks. They're not cutting rates because things are strong. They're cutting because the system is cracking. Inflation's eating savings. The labor market's stalling. Confidence in the dollar is fading fast. For decades, the Fed built a house of paper. Now they're striking the match that could burn it all down, leaving you to pay the price. When's the last time you actually held the wealth you've spent your life working for? My friends at Noble Gold Investments have been helping Americans move from paper wealth into real tangible assets. Numbers on a screen can disappear, but physical gold and silver, they've outlasted every crisis in history. Visit NobleGoldInvestments.com and get your free wealth protection kit today. That's NobleGoldInvestments.com for your free wealth protection kit. Discover how simple it is to protect your future.
Past performance may not be indicative of future results. Investing in precious metals, including gold, involves risks. Consult with your tax attorney or financial professional before making an investment decision.
And welcome, everybody. It is episode 233 of the Rugby Rant. We are in season 7. I'm the big guy, Scott Ferrara. That is Rob the Hammer Hammersmith. And we're with you another week, another episode, another MLR week, another week where nobody can watch a fucking game, apparently. so, you know, it seems we're going to talk about it later, but it seems to be deja vu in that. But Rob, how have you been doing?
Well, I was just going to ask how you've been doing. It's a hot minute since we've been on together, just a few weeks, you know, coordinating schedules. And, you know, you're in baby drama or child drama, and I'm not.
Nash Bash was not, or Cashville, whatever they called it, yep. was not on in my cards this year, which was fine. But thank you to Rob and Matt Cartwright and Rugby 100 Club for doing a nice mixed podcast there. You guys did a great job.
Oh, thanks. Yeah, still working out the tech a little bit, but the weekend was phenomenal. The facility was incredible. If you haven't gotten a chance to go there, it's awesome. I really think the big push was not necessarily for an MLR team, although I'm not saying that it's ruled out. I think for them, the big push is they want to host pools, you know, some aspect of the World Cup, and that facility would be a great facility to host like a lower tier one, tier two matchup. And the wonderful thing about that facility is it's in a great town. Like, we went out Saturday night at a great time and on Broadway, damn near bought 3 pair of cowboy boots for the price of one. And, but you know, we were at Miranda Lambert's place and we were hanging out at the old Red. It was really a great experience. I'm glad I went. A lot of fun. And, you know, if they host events in the future, rugby events in the future, folks, if you're listening, go to Nashville. Awesome.
That's my question before we get into our round the pitch. Do you think that would be a good neutral venue site for an MLR championship next year?
Well, I do. And one of the big reasons is it's not hard to get around. There's plenty of hotel motel space. And we did an Airbnb. So for the folks that don't know, Matt Cartwright and his lovely wife, Jennifer, the Falcons, Sheila and Dan came up, and then myself, the Mrs. Hammer, and then friends of ours, Zubin and Courtney, went down with us. And so we actually were able to get an Airbnb in a condo. They were, you know, a two-bed, two-bath condo, and they're right around on the same floor, right around the corner. So it worked out real good. We're down the street from, Fat Bottom Brewery.
Nice.
Okay. And it was, you know, 20 minutes pretty much to 15 minutes to get downtown, 20, you know, 15 minutes to get to the pitch. Really easy to get around, and Broadway was freaking fabulous. It was a lot of fun. Definitely a visit again, and a truly neutral site venue, 100%.
How many seats?
You know what? I don't know offhand. It's much bigger than SeatGeek. So I would say probably, I'd have to look it up, but I would guess 27,000, if I had to guess. I think it's the biggest MLS venue that's there. And the really cool thing is there's a small racetrack next to it. And then literally it's like across, it's not a street. It's in the venue, but it's equivalent of being across the street. There's actually a big apartment complex or a condo complex with condos for sale. So you could actually buy a condo and, you know, live there. If you love soccer, you could just walk across the way, stumble across the way, stumble back. The premier kind of lounge was huge and absolutely fabulous. Great food. It was a really fabulous venue. I mean, I imagine it's much like what SeatGeek was in the early 2000s when SeatGeek was built.
Nice. Yep. You know, Red Bull Arena is kind of like that. That area built up a lot of condos right near the stadium. And you know what? Maybe that should be the site for the HSBC Sevens spot next year, because
yeah,
you know, New York was not successful. You know, so let's put it somewhere where both coasts has a better chance of getting there and filling up a stadium. So I think you're right. I think they proved at least to USA Rugby that they could put on an event there.
Yeah, oh, 30,000. So I knew it was upwards of 27,000, 30,000. And Scott, that's lightning in a bottle, buddy. Yeah. That's lightning in a bottle. I mean, you always have great ideas, in spite of, you know, how much shit I love to give you. But, I mean, you know, the Packers weren't your best idea.
More championships ever?
I'm still going there. I'm still going there. But no, seriously, like 100%, like that could be the new kind of Vegas Sevens, in that people would have a phenomenal weekend there.
I think that's what I'm saying. And that's what we talked about, why Vegas was so good, because the party scene, you know, in LA kind of didn't have that at the time. And Red Bull, unfortunately, certainly doesn't have that. So you have to go back into the city, you know, take the train to the city for that. So I think, you know, Nashville might be the way to go.
And I don't know that the weather is going to be killer there when it was in New York, I think in March, right? Mm-hmm. I'm not sure how good the weather is going to be. It might be a little iffy, but certainly it's going to be better than it would anything north of, you know, probably DC, that DC line going all the way across. So you can't beat it. Now, if they had it in like April, May, June, oh, bro, yeah, it would be awesome.
Mm-hmm. But, you know, we're always fighting for the better stops, you know, so with the better stops about
when their weather
is. So that's one thing. But anyway, let's get on to our show. And let's hit around the pitch. All right, Hammer, you're up first, brother.
Okay, so real quick, I just want to give everybody a heads up. Whether it be next week or the week after, we're going to have Wendy Young on the Scrum Half Connection. And as you guys know, she's really on top of WER and a supporter of LGBT and trans rights. And one of the things that came out recently was the WER stance on transgender participation. And there's a lot of politics caught up in that are connected to a lot of governing bodies, including USA Rugby, including World Rugby, including IOC, and of course the United States. So we're going to try to uncover this, kind of unwrap this a little bit with Wendy in the upcoming future. But it's really an issue we want to talk a bit more about here in the Rugby Rant about women's issues, and this issue is tied up into women's rugby. So I think it's a natural progression. But speaking of that, more importantly, at least in the immediacy, I was had the opportunity to be on the call for, I don't know, 20 some games at the CRAA Women's Sevens National Championship. There are two divisions there. There's the Premier Division with your Lifes, your Lindenwoods, your Armies, your Sacred Hearts, you go down the list there, Harvard. But then there was also a Challenger Division, and there were, I think, 24 teams there, 18 teams. There are six pools of three. At any rate, I want to throw a congratulations to Life. They're the winners of the Premier Division. They beat Lindenwood and UC Santa Barbara. congratulations to them. They won the Challenger division, and phenomenal work by all the ladies. It was a great event. It was in a phenomenal park, and I think Scott's going to put up a graphic here for those that don't know, haven't been down there in Indianapolis.
What's going on, everybody? It's the Hammer from the Rugby Rant Podcast Show. I'm here at Coons Field in the heart of Indianapolis. We're covering the CRAA Women's National Sevens Championships. And, of course, this is the turf field, newly installed, first games being played today, this morning, to be exact. It's an awesome facility. Anybody that's planning on coming to Indy next weekend for the men's 15s, this is what you can expect. Want to give everybody a little bit of inside view of what they will see when they arrive. Great slate of games on both sides, but there is a premier division matchup happening on the other side. We'll catch back up with you in a moment, and you'll get some on-field views there with playing action.
There you go. So that was the turf field, newly installed. I actually had the pleasure of calling the first game there. It's an AC3, you know, or whatever it's called. It's a World Rugby approved turf field. And the other side is a full grass field with grandstands. Phenomenal event, phenomenal location. It could really, it has a lot of potential for a lot of different competitions, from club to potentially MLR to, I think, and I believe the organizers want it to be a home for rugby, if not in the Midwest, in the United States. I mean, ideally, I think they'd like to have USA Rugby there. You saw that school in the background. That's a school that they're actually trying to get and lease so they can put offices in there. So like a USA Rugby could have permanent offices in there. They want to have a rugby, an actual home for the USA Rugby Hall of Fame. So there's a lot of things going on. Stay tuned for our socials. I'm going to put on a video that's going to combine all three videos that I took on location. But what a great event. I'm looking forward to going back to the men's 15s this weekend and being on the call for some of those matches.
Yeah, listen, I know you were excited. You and Fee were in the booth there calling some matches. And, you know, 20 matches in 2 days, that's heavy lifting, dude. So good job. And it was a great call. Right on the mic. You know, so if Ben Holden ever, you know, wants to retire, we could throw Rob the
I could only hope that I could fill those shoes.
So my around the pitch is going to be a little unusual. Sunday, we record on Mondays, I was doing some yard work, and I was listening to some podcasts, and one of the podcasts I listened to was Matt and Shane Secret Podcast, Matt McCusker and Shane Gillis, and they're comedians, and they just kind of BS, and they had an Australian comedian on. But the whole thing they were talking about was, you know, the Flyers are in the playoffs, the Sixers are in the playoffs, you know, all this stuff. So they talk about a lot of sports. And the gist of it was, the Americans were talking about, is it better to have a singular owner as ownership or to have like a management cover the ownership? But the Australian ended up talking about something that we kind of know and love here. So we're gonna just listen to it. It's about a minute. Hold on. Not working. Don't know why it's not working.
Technical difficulties.
It worked when we tested it, Rob. So that's fun. And of course it's not. So bear with me while I find it.
So you need to exit the Flyers. Yeah. They've sucked for a decade. Yeah.
So let's try this. All right.
Have I ever told you about the F45 gym man? No. There was an Australian man who invented that kind of gym. And then he came out and he started buying teams. He came to America and he started buying teams, but he like didn't have huge money. So he bought like a rugby league team. I think like a very low level baseball team, but he named them after a cocktail that he was inventing. I think I'm getting this right. His name was Adam Gilchrist, and he called them like the Gilgronis, because he was going to come out with his own personal cocktail called like the Gilgroni, like a Negroni, to fit his name.
Yeah.
But then he went bankrupt, and the cocktail never came out, but the team had 2 years of playing.
As the
and they changed the name. And like people were very upset, who were fans of the team. And Everything about it, I'm not saying that he was necessarily a huge cocaine addict, but
yeah,
everything about it screams. He bought two teams, you know, they're both after cocktails that never came out. He was about to be legally paying the players or something. And then they just went away to play in the playoffs. And now they folded. Now there's no team in Austin.
And that's a single owner. See, it's what happened. That was a time.
Am I getting this right?
So that was interesting. I almost jumped off my ride-on lawnmower, Rob. when he said, have you ever, as soon as he said, have you ever heard of the F45 gym owner? And I went, you're talking about Gilchrist and the Austin Gilgronis, the LA Giltinis. And he gets it somewhat right. I mean, he gets the gist of it right for people who don't know the details. But I mean, talk about a blast from the past where they're talking about singular ownership. And originally they're talking about, you know, they're talking about the Sixers and the Flyers, and they're based out of Philly, these guys. You know, they're Philly guys, and they're talking about the Knicks and the Celtics. And then to throw in not the Austin Herd, not the Austin Elite, but the Austin Gilgronis and the LA Giltinis. And the LA Giltinis being the 2021 MLR champions, right? Talking about illegally paying the players and talking about how, well, he didn't specify which one, but the fact that LA and Austin, no, I don't think Austin was going to get there, were effectively kicked out of the playoffs for that 2022 season. That was not on my bingo card for April 26, 2026.
Well, it's kind of interesting that they were talking about this singular ownership, because I got to be honest with you. The movement is away from it, right? I mean, right now there's a lot of private equity that's been in the NFL has even created a system in which private equity can now have up to, I think it's what, a 10% stake or share in a team. So I think it's a rarity, you know, even the Bears are going and selling part of that to private equity, but for the most part,
but they're not getting voting rights, you know, like they're not making.
No, that's true.
Decision that's, versus they were talking about, like, what they were talking about was like the drip down effect from one. Essentially, one of them was saying the drip down effect from one owner and the passion versus, you know, a conglomerate of people owning it. And maybe the course isn't as clear with the conglomerate. And then they brought up the fact that James Dolan owns the Knicks and the Knicks fucking suck. So maybe the singular ownership thing isn't always the best. But in all of that, they talked about not Chicago Hounds, not Anthem, not California Legion, not Old Glory, not Seattle. They talked about
the Gilgronis and the Giltinis.
And the Giltinis.
Yeah, that's funny. That's funny.
For our around the pitch. And for our rant, we're going to talk about what happened in week five and preview a little bit of week six. Again, if you saw, you know, it depends how many matches you actually got to see. Some of us didn't get to see all of them. We'll talk about that in a second. So week five, I think the first game we're going to talk about is the Friday night game, right? Well, let's show you the week five scores here real quick. So you have the Hounds beating handily the Seawolves on Friday night. Then you have New England beating Anthem. Now, I have a question, Rob. If you didn't physically see New England beat Anthem, did they actually beat Anthem? Like, you know, when a tree falls in the forest and nobody's around to see it, did it actually fall? Because yet again, week five, technical difficulties struck the ESPN stream. What the fuck? But we'll go into that. We'll go into that in a little bit. And then we have California Legion beating Old Glory. So let's go into the first match, Rob. It's Seawolves Chicago. I mean, Brock Webster, right? It was the Brock Webster show. Is that what we call it?
Yeah, three tries, gobbling up meters, looked really good. I love that addition to the Hounds. I knew he would be an absolute killer when he joined. It's really solidified that 15 role because they haven't really had a true fullback since their inception. They had kind of guys that could play fullback, like Matina, but Matina, you know, I don't know that he was a dedicated fullback.
would say the team is more of a 10 that could be utilized.
Right. Right. And the same thing with Adrian Carlissa, right? Same kind of deal. But Brock Webster is a true fullback and he plays like it. For this one, I think what we're seeing with the Chicago Hounds, and by the way, the last three games, as they pointed out on the broadcast, 8 tries, 9 tries, 9 tries. Like, holy crap. Mm-hmm. We're talking about an almost a 9-try average per game.
And Seattle, you know, scored their two last tries in the 70th, in the 77th minute. Whereas out of the 9 tries scored by Chicago, I would call 7 of them in the first half. Even though I know Brock's last one was in the 41st minute in the second half, but it was right at the beginning of the second half after he scored one at the death at halftime. So, you know, interestingly enough, he scores one within 3 minutes, then he scores one at death at halftime, and then immediately comes out and scores the next one right at the kickoff. So I would count all those on the first half. Mason Flesch had his in the first half, and Lucas Rumbaugh, Mark O'Keefe had theirs in the first half. So like I said, I would count 6 out of those 9 tries in the first half only to Seattle's 1 try in the first half. And then again, you know, Chicago stopped scoring essentially in the 56th minute, 57th, that's when the conversion was. But again, holding Seattle up until the last 10 minutes for those 2 tries, I think, is just a testament to Chicago firing on all cylinders.
Absolutely. And I think it starts first with the forwards. No doubt, I'm not dismissing the backs. The backs were phenomenal, and I want to get to that in a moment. But it starts with great forward play. I don't know that they have that dominant scrum where they they have a great scrum. I don't know that it's a dominant scrum. They've shown a little bit of the ability to be attacked there, but I think their lineout is of really good quality. But it's more than that. It's their ability to work together as a unit around the pitch and the loose. It's their ability to work together in the rolling maul. That's what's really and it's their ability to work together inside that 5-meter area in getting those ground and pound type of tries. These guys are mongrels and they take pride on it. And I just want to touch upon the fact that for me, look at the back row, right? You have a back row of all Canadian back row, and that one with the Awuru and Rumbaugh moving to 7. McLean Jones getting a rest, Awuru coming at 8, and then on the other side, of course, Mason Flesch. But then you back that up with the ability to have Emmanuel Albert and Jake Kinevac come in, and you literally have two distinct sets of back rowers who conceivably could start in just about not any team, but could start in an MLR team. It's pretty impressive. And then I think you have 2 really solid front rows. What I think sets it for me is then you add that on to 2 center pairings that came together this game with Videla and Lutz. If you think about Videla, he's come in as a sub in every game, and in every game he's had an immediate impact in that role. But then you give him a starting opportunity and he plays really well, really well. Lutz was all over the place. So you have literally 2 interchangeable center pairings. And then you back that up with 4 wings, Wall, Brown, O'Keefe, and Tidwell. And Tidwell's done pretty well in games 2, with I think the 2nd and 3rd game in absence of absence of Brown because Brown was injured. So what does that mean? It means depth. And it's one of the things that woefully failed Seattle. They had some injuries in this game. They had a red card, a yellow card. And let's face it, the Hounds took advantage of it. 2 tries scored while Hadding was out, 4 tries scored when Lindenmuth was out. So you add all that up, and you get an idea just how lethal the Hounds can be over the course of this 10-game season.
And I wonder, too, you know, Lindenmuth out. You talk about, does that make the scrums a little bit easier for the Hounds? You know what I mean? Because you knock out the starter, what, in the 30th minute, I think, around there. Maybe in the 28th minute, he had that red card. So, you know, you've knocked him out for the rest of the half he would have played. Plus, probably you're thinking he'd probably go 50, 55 minutes, right?
Yeah.
And now you have to go to plan B off the jump and not have a backup for that backup.
So, yeah. Right. Although Lerone White came in off the bench and did pretty well.
I mean, he's a he played pretty well. Listen, I think, you know, he's a starter on another team. You know, he might not be a starter on Seattle, but he's a starter on another team. And he's played a lot of minutes. I'm not saying that, but also it's just, you know, sometimes when you have to go to plan B too early, you just kind of get the jitters. You talked about
100%.
Yeah, lineouts and set pieces. So the Hounds won 20 of 21 set pieces. They won their four scrums and they won 16 out of 17 lineouts versus the four scrums that Seattle won. And their scrum success was only 80%. And then they won 100% on their lineouts, 9 for 9, but still a 20-13 set piece advantage going toward to the Hounds. And again, you talked about discipline, 14 penalties conceded by Seattle to the Hounds, 7, no cards for the Hounds. And we talked about that yellow and that red. And if you look at defense, you know, tackles made, this is where, to me, you'll see it. Tackles made, 196 tackles for Seattle, 191 for the Hounds, almost even despite the Hounds scoring so much and having the ball in hand so much. You would see the losing team with way more tackles. And here's the thing,
right.
33 tackles missed. The Seattle was only had a 78% success rate on tackles versus the Hounds, 85%. The Hounds won 12 turnovers to Seattle's 3. So, I mean, I think that just sums it up right there.
And it's interesting you talk about those things on defense that are kind of wonky stats that you would think would be very different. The Seattle actually had more carried distance than the Hounds by over 153 meters.
Yep.
Right.
But look at the kicking meters for the Hounds getting that.
Correct. Correct. But it goes back to that trusting and backing the forwards to get the yeoman's work done close to the try line. Right.
Yep.
Here's the dagger in the heart, 15 turnovers to the Hounds, 10 conceded by Seattle. You know, total passes was a lean towards Seattle. So it's perhaps efficiency for the Hounds. You know, they're just an efficient crew on both offense and defense.
Well, I think it goes back to a lack of tackling discipline, because the Hounds had 11 clean breaks to Seattle's 4, right? And defenders beaten, 33 Hounds, 21 Seattle. And that defenders beaten goes back to the 33 tackles missed. Right. So those two can coinciding and then getting 11 clean breaks is this and I don't want to say despite, but even though the forwards are doing the tough thing inside inside the 22 meters, those 11 clean breaks are getting at least, you know?
Yeah. Hey, I want to read you something. I want to read fans something real quick. Hopefully, sure. I won't be too long winded. There's a lot here. So this is an analysis prior to the game of this match, okay? Chicago's rolling. Seattle's still trying to figure out who they are, but here's the catch. Seattle has owned this matchup historically at home, 2-0, and they play a style that can slow games down. That's your tension right there. Chicago has the ball. What do they do well? Relentless attack, physical dominance, line break ability. This is not finesse rugby. This is smash mouth and go again. What it means, Chicago isn't just scoring. They're breaking teams mentally. That's why they're averaging 7 tries per match to Seattle's 3.3. Okay? All right. Now, Seattle, when they defend, missed tackles, 74% tackle rate. This is a red flag. And against the Chicago attack, missed tackles turn into tries fast. The reality, Seattle's defense is reactive instead of aggressive, vulnerable after first contact, and Chicago lives in that second phase. Okay? I could go on. Tell me, what do you think of that analysis based upon what we now know on the back end of this game?
Well, I think ill discipline can change the way teams play. I'll say that. You know what I mean? You can take a team that is great at slowing people down, and if the other team is ill-disciplined and missing a ton of tackles and they get a couple breakaways, then all of a sudden that analysis is moot because the other team didn't do what they were supposed to do. And so I'm just saying, like, sometimes the analysis is right but it's not proof of the example.
I got you. They can't predict yellow cards, right? Three keys to the match: tackle efficiency for Seattle. If they miss tackles early, this gets ugly fast. True? That bear fruit?
Yes.
That bore fruit. Break conversion, Seattle. They can break lines, but can they finish? Three, phase control, Chicago. If Chicago gets rolling in phase play, Seattle won't stop it. Okay?
That's what happened.
Okay. You know who did this analysis?
Did you do the analysis?
No. I can't take credit for it. I read it and went, this is fucking fabulous. I can't take credit for it, though.
James Dealey.
No. AI.
ChatGPT. Who needs the Rugby Ran, everybody? Rob just put us out of business.
So I'm throwing a shout out to my boy Jumbo Shepley, one of my boys at the Chicago Blaze. He took some statistics that I think Chicago put out on their socials, right? He took all those stats, threw them into AI, and asked for an analysis, and that's what spit it out. His purpose of doing this analysis, it's like 2.5 pages, was when he goes to watch parties for away matches, and he has friends that have never really seen much rugby. He gives it to him and says, all right, read this. Now watch the game. Great idea. Like my boy Shep sent me this, and I'm going, this is awesome. And sure as shit, a dog AI turned out to do a pretty damn good analysis of this game on the back end.
All right. So let's talk about the next game, New England Free Jacks 38, Anthem 26. Now, if I told you this, that one of these teams led in all attack categories and all set piece categories, what team did you think did that? The winners, New England 38, or Anthem, the losers of 26?
Well, New England 38, that's what I would think.
Absolutely not. Anthem led all attack categories at the end of the match and all set piece categories at the end of the match, and unfortunately lost. Now, New England had more kicking meters, and even though Anthem had more territory, possession remained about even. So what that tells me in my expert analysis, ChatGPT, you need to check out the defense stats, right? So let's go to the defense stats, because if Anthem had the most possession, but the territory remained relatively equal based upon the kicking, you'll see Anthem only successful, the successful tackle percentage, there we go, if I can talk, 72% to New England's 77%. Now, you don't think that 5% is that much, but it does make a big difference, especially when 70 is on the, the 72 is on the lower end of what most teams have as a successful tackle percentage throughout the season. This is one of the lowest throughout the season. So that kind of shows you, on the offensive end, where New England was winning 17-5 at halftime, and then really just kind of continued to push and push and push. And quite like Seattle in the game we talked about before, Anthem scored in the 72nd and the 79th minute trying to push that pace. But you know what? They just ran out of time. And also I believe they missed one of their conversions, so that's another 2 points. So you're talking, a 10-point swing or a 10-point loss if you hit that conversion instead of a 12. Now, that's still not going to give you the bonus point. But it is what it is. Because, even if you look at discipline, guess who had more penalties conceded? New England.
Yeah, I was going to say probably New England.
So, it's just one of the, you even look at the breakdowns, the ruck success rate, not that off. The maul success rate, guess what? Anthem had them by a lot. Maul success rate percentage for Anthem, 83. New England, 67. So how are you telling me they're leading in all these categories and honestly winning, being up 17-5 at half, which they just looked, it looked easy that first half. And then even that second half, New England scored early, 43rd minute, 48th minute, and finally the 67th minute. And then Anthem went and did their push. So I'm just, I think despite the score, despite looking at all the statistics, I would say the Free Jacks dominated, but I didn't get to fucking see it, Rob. There was technical fucking difficulties. So you fucking tell me if New England won the game. Because I didn't know until I read the fucking social media. So let's talk about the real thing in the room. Why does this keep happening? And it's happening in different stadiums and different teams on different days with different fucking times. So it's just not like, oh my God, Starfire, let's just use Starfire has an issue that they're trying to figure out. No, this is an issue everywhere. What the fuck is going on, Rob?
I don't know. And it's not ESPN. You got to remember ESPN only gets the feed. They're just like, they're the provider. Like they're so the vehicle.
The production team right? Is still Globant, right? Is that the production team for MLR?
No. I don't think.
Who is it now?
I honestly don't know because I'm not involved anymore. So I don't know who the production team is.
Well, whoever they are, they fucking suck. I'll tell you that right. You can clip this and send it to them. They fucking suck. Because this is, I don't understand. This is week five. This is season number like fucking 9, 8, whatever the fuck it is. What are we doing, Rob? What the fuck are we doing?
Well, if I did that, I probably would guarantee I'd never get a sideline opportunity again with that organization. But nevertheless, it's funny you say that because I had to watch the game. Not had to. I'm part of a group that kind of, you know, is involved in the selection process for MLR Players of the Week, Team of the Week, et cetera. And by the way, kudos to our boy, the Strobro, Aaron Castro, because I think he's doing a really nice job. And he's doing a really nice job in really trying to diversify who's involved in those selections. Like it's previous winners, there's media, there's coaches, and I believe there's GMs involved. So he's really trying to get a pretty good smattering of who has an opinion and who has hold sway when it comes to the weekly selections. So it's a lot of fun to be involved with, but I had to, that was my game and I'm watching and I'm going, all right, I'm watching I want to watch the last, 15 minutes or something like that. And I'm like, all right, let's see it. Because there's a couple guys I just want to see if they do a really nice job of finishing, but I couldn't.
And so, it's funny. Let me interrupt you real quick. Our buddy James Dealey, NorthAmericanRugbyDatabase.com.
Yes.
And our NARB, there we go,
yeah.
NARB.com. Canada broadcast was fine. I forgot what service it's broadcasting on, but you would assume if that, let's just say TSN or whatever, their premier sports or whatever he was watching on, and ESPN are both just piggybacking off of whatever the production is. How the fuck did he watch the whole game and the people in the United States couldn't?
So it may be ESPN then. Maybe I'm wrong.
That's what I'm saying. I don't know if it's ESPN fucking up or if it's whatever productions is happening on the ground, because to me, you would assume they've now played a game pretty much everywhere, match everywhere.
Yeah.
So all those bugs should be gone as far as on ground production. So it to me, and my hypothesis is it has to be the link between whoever's producing and whatever's getting sent to ESPN and ESPN not following through. And to be honest, who's actually looking at those feeds? They're showing cricket, they're showing, Division II lacrosse, they're showing everything on ESPN Plus. And that's not a knock on anybody. My point is it's not like they have every employee looking at every feed to make sure it's going
through. Right. Right. It's a lot of content there. I want to throw one piece out there, and that is this. So in this particular game, I thought there were some real standouts, and it's just so unfortunate. I talked about players of the week at every position. Brock Webster had an absolute banger, right? But I want to throw a shout-out to Julian Roberts, a former member of the NOLA Gold. Like, he had one hell of a match, scored a try, gobbled up meters. There was a chip and chase. He gobbled that up. And then it was almost taken for a try, but it was knocked down. And this is what I'm going to circle back to your point, Scott. They led in the anthem, led in every offensive category, every single one. And they led in many other categories tied to set piece, tied to other areas of the game. Right. So what happened? Execution. I think it comes down to execution. They didn't convert into points when they had opportunities. Mm-hmm. And if you watched Wayne Vanderbank, who had an absolute blinder, if you watched Joel Hodgson, these guys.
5 for 5 on conversions, a penalty, and a try, Joel Hodgson.
Right. There was some great continuity between those players. I think who's a scrum half? It's not Poland's gone. It's Oscar Lennon. Was it Lennon that played?
It was Lennon. Yeah, he started. Yeah.
Oscar Lennon scored a great try, but it was off of offload from Joel Hodgson.
Yes.
I mean,
the 40th, 50th minute, I think.
Like great continuity, but they converted. That's my point. They converted. They didn't make fundamental errors, right? I think Vanderbank had a break, and he had one caught up in a tackle, and he knocked it out.
That was early first.
Right. But the most part, they converted, and that's what I think this game came down to is execution.
I mean, and you look at Anthem, Dominic Aquino only showed up a week or two ago getting on the score sheet with a try. So, I mean, I think they just need to put a little bit more together offensively and execute.
But yeah.
They have the game plan, but they need to execute, especially in the early minutes.
Esdale played awesome on the wing too, by the way.
Yes.
I liked his game.
Yep. All right, so let's go to the Legion Old Glory match, or Legion at Old Glory. Legion 36, Old Glory 23. My boy Johnny Powers scoring a try there. Gotta love it at the death. You know, a little bit too late, unfortunately. But you know, still like to see my friend score tries. You know what I mean? So again, if I told you a team let in 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 out of the 8 attacking categories, let in all the breakdown categories, and almost let in all the set piece categories, would you say that team was the winner?
Yes.
It was not. It was DC. man, and it's funny because you can't even really look at this point, it's not the tackle success percentage because they were both at 82, but it's California having 200 made tackles to OGDC's 128. So almost double the made tackles. While the percentage of success were the same, the actual physical made tackles seems to be the difference here. And I mean, you know, it was just domination by California Legion. I got to be honest. And all the shit I talked about them not traveling well, they fucking traveled well on Sunday. That's for sure. So I'll see myself out.
There you go. I think. It's the second game we've talked about here in which turnovers were won by the team that won in spite of whatever offensive statistics were won by the losing team. You know, so in other words, that was confusing as hell. I apologize, fans. Anthem led in almost every offensive category, widening that converted to success. In this game, OGDC led in almost every offense category. Why didn't it lead to success? And I think it comes down to turnovers won, 8-5 or 8-6. Excuse us. Sorry. My apologies. I went to the wrong place. Lineouts won, total lineouts. I'm sorry, Scott. My eyes are deceiving me.
What are you looking for? I'm sorry. You're looking
turnovers. I had turnovers won. Oh, yeah. Turnovers conceded. 21-14.
Yeah, 21-14. Yep.
Yep. So OGDC had 7 more turnovers conceded. So I think, you know, a big part of this game, these games are coming down to the breakdown, coming down to turnovers, coming down to who can disrupt a line out, who can win a scrum penalty, who can, you know, kind of flip the script in that but part of the game.
Problem. Here's the problem. We talked about execution, right, in the last match.
Yeah.
By Anthem. Billy Meeks got a red card in like the 11th minute. So now you got 20 minutes of a man up, and then Billy Meeks no longer being in the match. You got to convert, but you got to execute better in those 20 minutes to run the score up on a good California Legion team, especially if you're at home. So you had the red card and you were at home. You have home field advantage. You're up a man. You can't let it go by you like that, you know? And guess what? No tries scored. There was penalty conversions, but no try scored by DC at that time. So,
yeah, and I can appreciate, yeah, here turnovers won, California Legion 9-4 on OGDC. And so, you know, you think a team that's so is maybe they're just too much of an emphasis on defense, not enough on attack in the offseason. I don't know. But, you know, I think what we are seeing is California Legion are waking up. Remember what I said in, I think it was week 2, where the Hounds beat up on the Legion pretty much the whole game. I said, you know, be careful. They may not look like they have a tremendous attack right now, but it's going to take time for them to A, get fit, and B, begin to develop some continuity so they can play the style of game that Hoyles wants to play, with Bertrand at the kind of as the linchpin. I think we're now seeing them get into their stride after, you know, what is it? They've had four matches, if I'm not mistaken, because I believe they played week, or maybe five matches because they played week one. So is that right? They're
well, we'll check the standings right.
Yeah, we'll check the standings. Yeah, they played five matches. But so they have a game in hand against both other teams.
But also, if you look at the time that they were down a player, they had a converted try, a penalty, and then right when that player came back on, they scored another try and converted. So you're talking about seven. I would count 17 points they scored down a man. Right. That's crazy. To DC's 6 points. So that's your halftime score, leading at halftime 17-6, down a guy.
And is that has that come down to anemic offense on behalf of OGDC? In other words, you're a man, but if you can't get the power in hockey terms, the power play going, then you can't take advantage of that opportunity.
Yeah, I don't, you know, we talk about, it's special teams can win games, you're right. They talk and say football, and they say that in hockey too. You know, a good penalty kill, which is essentially what California Legion did. You know, so they scored a lot on the penalty kill, more than you should have. So again, it comes down to execution on OG part on both sides of the ball when up a man, which is a little bit crazy. You know, we talk about hockey. That's the Herb Brooks bag skate there. I think it is needed a little bit.
Interesting game for sure. So it'll be interesting to watch California next week. Or, you know, I think they have a week off.
Real quick, we'll just look at the standings as of now, and then we'll talk about
week six. Okay.
There we go. So you have the Hounds on top, obviously 4-0. You have California Legion 3-2, 17 points. Anthem 2-3 with 11 points, just edging Old Glory. New England Free Jacks finally getting in the win column again, though. Nobody saw it, so I don't know if it counts. So really, should they be in last place? 0-0-3 with 2 points? I don't know. And Seattle coming up with their 6 points there at the bottom half of the standings. So, Rob, you want to talk about – yep.
Well, I was going to say it makes this upcoming slate of games really, really interesting, doesn't it? Especially at the bottom of the table. Right, because with Anthem and the Legion not having a game in hand, not being able to get any points this weekend, the Legion will probably stay where they're at. There's no chance anybody moving into second place. And certainly the Hounds aren't coming down out of first place, so we won't really see any change at the top of that. But what you could see is Seattle, if they can beat New England, they can actually get into that spot to tie themselves with the Anthem if they get a bonus point, right, for four tries, add on 5 points. They put themselves into third place right there tied with Anthem. And then, the Free Jacks, if they win, they can put themselves into that third place with a bonus point or tie for that third place if they just win and beat Seattle into that spot right there with the Anthem. And of course, DC with a win could put themselves into that spot as well. And it could really impact the bottom of the table, which makes it for real, real interesting week.
So speaking of, we have two games this week, both on Sunday. You have your 4 p.m. Seattle visiting New England. That's going to be a tough one to call. I mean, New England had their best match of the season, obviously, right? Last week, despite not being able to watch it. They were dominant. Seattle just killing themselves on a lack of composure and a lack of discipline. So the question is, if we see Seattle work with the discipline and bring that tackle success rate up to an 85 or a 90, do you think they can give the Free Jacks a hard time? I think they can, but Seattle has yet to show us that consistent discipline. So for me, I take the Free Jacks here.
I take the Free Jacks as well, and I take them a little different. I'll take a little different approach to that discipline issue. Linnenmuth, we know, is going to be disciplined. He will not be available in this match, so that's going to be a tough ask for the scrum of Seattle to take on the Hounds, for Seattle to take on New England, especially in New England. My apologies. And then the other thing is that they're banged up, right? Yep. I think injuries have taken their toll. Clarkie actually talked about it this week in his release this morning. So I think New England at New England, they're winners far and away for sure for me.
Then you have Chicago Hounds at home against Old Glory. And again, Old Glory on the side of, I wouldn't say lack of discipline, but maybe I would say anemic offensive output at this point. And the Hounds averaging 8.5 tries a match. You know, do the Hounds come down to play their competition at the same level, Rob? You know, I mean, at a certain point, the bubble's going to burst. Let's be honest. This is sports, right? You know, some, you know, you take a playoff here, a bad bounce there, and all of a sudden, maybe Old Glory's in a slugfest with the Hounds.
Well, here's what I'm going to say. I don't know that it happens this week. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to say two things on that end. Number one, knowing Latho pretty well, I think Latho is on a mission, and this team collectively has adopted this approach. They're on a mission to prove everybody that they can kick the crap out of the competition. They don't just want to win. They want to dominate in every way. And if you look at the way they play with the forwards and a forward dominated, you know, attack, they grind you down, wear you out, then let the backs go to work and you know, stab you with those, with those sharp, mm-hmm. sharp scissors. So that's number one. Number two, I actually, dare I say it, I don't have a problem if they lose a game here coming up.
Well, so my thing is, when you're looking forward to the schedule, the letdown game for me is actually next week when they have Anthem coming to town, because then the week after that is the showdown at High Noon on Saturday, well, at 4 p.m. Eastern. High 1 p.m. at California, where the Chicago has to go to Legion. So really the letdown game for me, you know, when you look at these games from a college football standpoint, it's actually next week with Anthem coming in.
Yeah, I don't think they lose that one. I think that one of the things that Latho prides and this team prides itself on is playing for this city, playing for these fans. I've been around the Hounds collectively, and there's a nucleus of guys that have been here since the beginning. And that culture that was developed early on has continued to spread and proliferate through most of the players. And that is, they love the fans. Every game you go down on the pitch and every one of those players sticks around and talks to every kid that approaches them, talks to everybody who wants to say hi, talks to every girl that swoons over them. They love their fans, and that's truly who they're playing for. So I don't think it happens at home. I think it happens in California. I think that's where they, and I'm okay with that. And I'm okay with that because I want them hungry come playoff time. Mm-hmm. I want them to say, that's not happening again in the playoffs. We will dominate in the semifinal and in the final. So that's where I think it happens.
Yep, I hear you. So, I mean, after that trek out to Legion, they're playing home against Seattle, and then the last two mm-hmm. matches are both away, away against Old Glory and away against New England. And New England, Old Glory, and Seattle, right now being at the bottom of the table, will want to play spoiler to somebody. And not even play spoiler to knock them out of playoff contention, but just to play spoiler to maybe not get them a home playoff game if that's the case.
Yeah.
But so. I think this week, but back to my pick, I think this week Chicago does handle business. But yep. I also don't think it's not impossible for there to be a couple rough bounces and all of a sudden they're in a prize fight against them. So that's our week six predictions, baby. We're rocking and rolling.
Let me throw a shout out before we move away and close out the show. I want to throw a big shout out to the Chicago Hounds. Again, to my point earlier, they listen to the fans. One of the common themes with the fans and season ticket holders has been angst because there are so many late Sunday night games. We have a lot of people from Wisconsin, from Indiana, from Iowa that come to the games from, you know, Chicago is a big city that are, that, you know, it could take an hour to an hour and a half to get to the pitch. And there are a lot of people that were upset, season ticket holders that are like, I can't even go to a game because it's late Sunday night. I got to work the next morning. What do? They move the game up from an 8 o'clock game. Two home games move from 8 o'clock to 5:30. They listened to the fans and they did what was important for fans. Not necessarily important for any other, you know, whether it's TV or the MLR or whatever have you. They did what was right for fans, and big shout out to the Chicago Hounds for doing that.
So two things. One, if it was a friggin' Bears game, those bitches would be there for Sunday Night Football.
That's true. You're not wrong. Want to point that
out. But that's also a joke. I'm just messing around. But also, I have my own shout out. I'm in a couple role play Discord servers, and one woman, you know, she saw my screen name and it has to do with rugby. Lady Ballad Bird. She's an American. She's been living in New Zealand for 16 years. She lives across the state, the street from where the Crusaders play for Super Rugby. She has gotten into the rugby in the 16 years she's been in New Zealand. You know, shout out. She's like, you know, Andy Ellis might be there because I told her, you know, me and Andy are tight. I was like, so if you see my boy Andy, tell him the big guy said hi. But just shout out to Lady Ballad Bird in one of my Discord servers. I told her I'd give her a
shout
out.
That's hilarious.
I'm telling you, man, rugby just connects in every way possible. And she's not the only, I mean, I've been doing role play servers now for like 20 years. And every time I mention rugby, there's somebody that either is, you know, tertiarily there. My cousin plays this, that, and the other thing, or they've played themselves, or their boyfriend, their girlfriend, whoever, their mother played. So you meet rugby fans everywhere. So shout out to Lady Ballad Bird over in the Discord server. And guys, that's a wrap up here of, episode 233. We covered week 5. We covered our predictions of week 6. And we talked a little bit about the Giltinis and the Grogonis. So knock that off your bingo card for MLR 2026, people. I'm the big guy, Scott Farrar. That's Rob the Hammer Hammerschmidt. We'll see you next week.